Okay, so I'm going to discuss some work done recently in collaboration with Noam Elkies and Theo Johnson-Freid. The objective of our project was to, as the title says, to build some holomorphic superconformative theories with some interesting properties motivated by a conjectural relation to topological modular forms. So I'm going to first define for you what holomorphic superconformative theories are, and then try to describe our results and the motivations and the methods that we used. So let me first begin with reviewing what a holomorphic CFT is. Let me just forget supersymmetry for a moment. So physically, holomorphic CFTs are a special case of conformophile theories in two dimensions, which are also a special case of two-dimensional quantum field theories. The main properties of holomorphic conformophile theories is that local operators in such a theory depend holomorphically on positions. So a conformophile theory gives you, in general, correlation functions defined on Riemann surfaces. An holomorphic conformophile theory gives you correlation functions which are meromorphic. Now, mathematically, an holomorphic conformophile theory can be presented by giving a vertex algebra of local operators. Not all vertex algebras gives you holomorphic conformophile theories, just because you could have conformophile theories where only a subset of the operators are holomorphic. That subset will still give you a vertex algebra, but will not give you a full theory. A vertex algebra gives you an holomorphic conformophile theory if it has no modules except itself. So A should be the only module. Let me remind you another property that we typically require from a quantum field theory is to have a stress tensor. So inside this vertex algebra, I will want to have a stress tensor which satisfies the usual PEs.
Something about this condition again, that A is the only reducible module over itself.
So, right, so vertex algebra in general has a certain modular tensor category of modules, vertex algebra modules, and you want this category to have just the identity element, the identity object. I think this is usually called an holomorphic vertex algebra. Also, I want to specify, I will always refer to unitary theories today. And the vertex algebra also should be unitary. So there should be the two-point functions on a sphere should give you a positive definite inner product. Okay, so this is what a holomorphic CFT is. There are various examples. For example, the monster CFT is a celebrated example, which is something with C equal to 24. And which has the monster group, is an automorphism group. Another thing I should stress is that the central charge is a very important property of the theory, and it gives in particular the gravitational anomaly. Which means it tells you essentially how the correlation functions transform under the mapping class group of the Riemann surface. So now, in order to talk about superconformophile theories, I need to modify this notion slightly. because I need to use fermions. So in this holomorphic conformal field theory, all operators have integral spin.
So this is an extremely restrictive condition, right? So
yes,
can you
that's right.
Something about why you would want to impose it from the start.
Oh well. What can I say? These are just very special conformal field theories, which can be treated in a mathematically very clean way. There is no mathematical theory of all two-dimensional conformal field theories.
But there is one of vertex algebras, so...
There is one of vertex algebras, which...
that assumption, so without that.
That's right, uh-huh. That's right. But for the purpose of my talk, I want to talk about true two-dimensional quantum field theories. If I take a generic vertex algebra, a rational vertex algebra, I can discuss things like boundary, two-dimensional boundary conditions of three-dimensional topological field theories, which is also interesting, and I think most of what I discuss can probably be extended to general vertex algebras, but it's a different. There are a lot of things work in a different way.
So you're not happy with finitely many. You're not happy with finitely many irreducible.
No, I just want one.
Sorry, can I ask you to repeat the question?
Right. So he asked. Am I not okay with having a finite number of irreducible modules? That's an interesting setup, which has physical meaning, but it's not a two-dimensional physical meaning. And today I want to stay in two dimensions. For example, all the discussion of anomalies I'll have only applies to true two-dimensional objects. It would have to be modified for more general boundary conditions. Okay. So, as I said, I want to use fermions to have supersymmetry. And to use fermions, I need to introduce, I need, for unitary theories, fermions means spinners. I need to have spinners on my Riemann surface. I need to have objects of conformal dimension, which is half integral. And as a consequence, this technology has to be modified. So I need something that is called a spin CFT, spin holomorphic CFT, which is a special case of a spin CFT. Which is a special case of a spin quantum field theory. So a spin quantum field theory is something that associates correlation functions to manifold the spin structure. And I want it to be still holomorphic. So which sort of mathematical data characterizes such a theory? Well, the bosonic operators with an even with integral spin still form a vertex algebra. So there is going to be a vertex algebra, let me call it A even, of bosonic local operators. But now there is going to be a module, A odd, of fermionic. Local operators. Together, A even and A odd form what's called the Neville-Schwarz sector of the theory. In the language of factorization algebras, this is what you would associate to a circle with a bounding spin structure. So the space of states on a circle with bounding spin structure will be given by the sum of these two vector spaces. The theory will also have a certain vector space associated to a circle with unbounding spin structure. I hope I have bounding and unbounding, right? Which is called Ramon sector in physics, and is again another module of this vertex algebra. And as far as I understand, holomorphicity means that these are all the modules. Okay. And we are done with this blackboard. Okay. And again, this will include a stress tensor, have a central charge, and so on. I will give examples of this momentarily. Now, finally, I'm ready to define a superconformal field theory. N equal 1 holomorphic superconformal field theory, which again is, a subset of N equal to 1, 0 general superconformal field theories, which are a subset of N equal to 1, 0 supersymmetric quantum field theories. So these are quantum field theories where one of the translation generators is the square of a supercharge. These are conformal field theories, so the conformal symmetry is extended by to a certain superconformal symmetry. And more concretely here, what I'm requiring is that in the same way as inside the bosonic operators there is a stress tensor, inside the fermionic operators, there should be a super partner of the stress tensor, which is something which has dimension 3/2 and OPE that work like this. Okay, well, this is proportional to the usual central charge.
Okay. Is there any requirement about the number of modules? In the first case, in the spin H.
Yes, yes. As I said, these have to be the only modules of A even.
That's actually happening.
And of course, there will be, these modules will have to fuse in a reasonable way. For example, if I fuse A odd with itself, I should get A even. If I fuse even with A odd, I get A odd. If I fuse A Ramon with itself, I should get some of these two, and so on and so forth. There is some kind of an Ising-like modular tensor category, roughly. I don't think it's precisely. Anyway, whose properties depend somehow in a little bit on the value of the central charge. Maybe I should recall, in the bosonic case, the central charge is always multiple of 24. 8, sorry. My bad. Yes, 8. Indeed, the simplest example I should have mentioned was the E8 at level 1. And in the fermionic, in the spin case, the central charge is always a multiple of 1/2. Okay. Now, having this supersymmetry here gives a variety of interesting properties. I will need one specific property, which is G has a zero mode acting on the Ramon sector. So if you recall, in vertex algebras, every local operator gives you an infinite tower of operators acting on the modules, acting on the algebra itself. These have integer moding here. So for example, T will have modes Ln for integer n. In the spin case, the odd operators have integer moding when acting on the nest sector. Half integer moding acting on the nest sector and integer moding acting on the Ramon sector. So for example, G acting on the nest sector will have modes like G1 half or G minus 1 half. Which together with the modes with L1, L-1, and L0 of the stress tensor gives you the global superconformal symmetry. But acting on the Ramon sector, there is a zero mode. And the zero mode squares to L0 minus C over 24. So whenever you have something like this with an energy, which is the square of supercharge, you can define a Witten index. So there is a number which is defined as trace on the Ramon sector of minus 1 to the F, Q to the L0 minus 20, C over 24. Let me remind you what the Fermi number symmetry is. In this setup here, you can think about rotations of the circle by 2 pi. This gives you a C2 symmetry called Fermi number symmetry. So it acts on these, where a even a odd have eigenvalues 0 and 1, 1 and minus 1, sorry. And it also acts on the Ramon sector, often in a slightly non-canonical way. And so I can do the trace on the Ramon sector, minus 1 to the f, times something to regularize the sum. But because of this property, every state for which a 0 minus 0 24 is non-zero is paired up by z0 to another state. And only states which have zero value of a 0 minus 0 24 can be unpaired. As a result, this is Q independent, this number. Called the index of this holomorphic supermorphic theory.
Is this a partition function on the torus with a certain spin structure?
That's right. So the question is this the partition function on the torus with a certain spin structure? That's correct. So this index, this elliptic genus, can be defined for all quantum field theories with 1,0 supersymmetry. And it's just the partition function on the torus with odd spin structure. Now, for a generic quantum field theory, it's going to be an holomorphic function of the modular parameter. But for these holomorphic theories, it's just a constant. Okay, any questions about these definitions? Also, I hope that my tone of, can you hear me? I should have asked perhaps earlier. Can you hear me over there?
He's sleeping.
Is this a yes?
Yeah.
Yes, excellent. Very good. Okay, so given these definitions, I can at least state our objective. Right? Our objective was to find n equal 1 holomorphic superconformal field theories with central charge 12k such that the index is what we conjecture being the smallest possible non-zero value, which is 24 divided by the greatest common divisor between 24 and k. Now, I will motivate this conjecture later on in the talk. For now, I will just say that we managed to find such CFTs for k equal to 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 until now. If you can find the remaining 19 ones, then we'll be done in the sense that once you have the one that with k equal to 24 and index 1, you can use it to make things periodic for all k's. But we've been finding these CFTs really by hand in a slightly randomized way. And so the computational becomes this our technique becomes computationally more intensive as k grows. I would really like to have a more abstract understanding of how to build these CFTs. But for now, we were very brute force. Okay, so let me give you some examples of let me explain you how to build such CFTs. And perhaps I should start by reminding you how to build CFTs. So now, in principle, you could find an holomorphic CFT just by taking some vertex algebra, checking if it has any modules, and if it has modules, trying to add them to the algebra to make it into an algebra which has no modules. Typically, this stops immediately because you cannot do it. Now,
can you say a word about the motivation of this question?
I will towards the end. probably speaking very fast while Theo throws things at me. But anyway, it has to do with topological modular forms. That's all I can say for now. So another way to produce holomorphic CFTs is to start with some holomorphic CFT that has been given to you and try to manipulate it to produce new ones. There are various techniques you can use to do so, in particular there's something called an orbit fold, which you can attempt doing whenever your original vertex algebra has some automorphisms. To start this procedure, you need to be given some vertex algebra, some holomorphic CFT. And a nice example are lattice. Holomorphic CFTs. So essentially, these come from vertex algebras with central charge, with integral central charge, such that the vertex algebra includes n dimension one currents. With free field OP. Whenever you have these currents, you can build a stress tensor. And by unitarity, this sort of exhausts the theory. This must be the stress tensor of the theory. And then everything else can be built in terms of representations of this current algebra of the currents. So the whole algebra decomposes into a sum of modules for these currents. These modules are labeled by vectors in Rn, and the ones that appear in the algebra form a lattice, an even self-dual lattice. This is even essentially because the dimension of these modules is lambda square over 2, and we want our operators to have integral dimension. And self-duality guarantees that there are no other modules for the vertex algebra. And so there is this celebrated construction of holomorphic conformal field theories based on even self-dual lattices.
Do you only consider unitary?
Yes, I said in the beginning.
Here.
I'm only considering unitary theories. Now, it's straightforward to. I'm going to erase my objective because I wrote it in a bad place.
So, are they called lattice HCFTs because of this lattice that you're using?
Yeah, they're built from a lattice.
It doesn't have to be like lattice field.
No, that's right. They're not lattice field theories, meaning they're not defined on a discretized lattice. This lattice is just the lattice of possible charges of local operators in the theory. So if you want to have a spin holomorphic, spin lattice, a lattice spin holomorphic CFTs, then you just need to drop even. So now you take L to be just a self-dual lattice. This is actually easier, right? Now the even, odd, and Ramon parts of the algebra are associated to the even part of the lattice, the odd part of the lattice, and the lattice shifted by what's called the characteristic vector divided by 2. So this is a vector such that the contraction with any other vector is the same as the length of that vector modulo 2. So it's pretty easy to build examples of spin holomorphic conformal field theories. I should mention there is another way to obtain another ingredient that you can use, which is you can also use fermions, free fermions. Which are a vertex algebra generated by objects of spin 1/2 and free field OP again. But free fermions tend to make the index 0, so it's not great for us. You could probably still use them, but we've decided not to use them. Notice that an even number of free fermions could really be cast as a lattice TFT, but yes?
Can we ask a quick question?
Yes.
What do you mean by the even and odd part of your lattice?
The vectors of even length and the vectors of odd length. So the question was, what do I mean with even and odd part of the lattice?
Thank you.
Okay. Very good. So now I want to figure out how to get a superconformal theory out of this. Now there is a classical way, really in the sense of classical field theory, which is to just pair up an equal number of fermions and bosons to get supersymmetry. So what I'm not going to do, but you could do, is to just take a bunch of a lattice CFT, add a bunch of fermions, and write a supercharge, which is psi I L I, J I. So add as many fermions as currents and pair them up. I'm not going to do this because I don't want fermions. So I need to find another less classical way to get a superconformal generator. And the way I'm going to do it is to just, well, I want to have just a lattice CFT without adding anything. So clearly, the superconformal generator must belong to the modules associated to some odd vector of length 3. So I'll write the superconformal generator as some sum over some lambdas of vectors operators where these belong to some set, and they all have dimension 3, length square 3. And then I will have to arrange things in such a way that this OPE works. That's far from obvious, but there is, again, a trick that can be used. I don't know how to do this for a general lattice, but I can do it for very special lattices. So it turns out that if you take the lattice Z of square root of 3, so the lattice generated by a vector of length square 3, this has a natural superconformal generator. Plus gamma of square root of 3 plus gamma of minus square root of 3 is a superconformal generator. So with this, when I say gamma lambda, I just mean the sort of the generator, the vector that generates this whole module. Okay, what's physically this is called a vertex operator, and I would write this as e to the I square root of 3 phi plus e to the minus I square root of 3 phi. Okay. Now, this is not a self-dual lattice, but what I can do is to take this to the power of n, and then just add up all the superconformal generators. This gives me a superconformal generator for the whole lattice, and then try to extend it to a self-dual lattice. So I can write my lattice as some sum over something like this. So I take this lattice, I shift it perhaps by 1 over square root of 3 or 2 over square root of 3, and I take sums of products of this form. And it turns out that this is controlled by a collection of vectors in F3 to the n. And this collection forms something is called a ternary code. And you can express conditions like self-duality and compute the index, and all the properties of the CFT, just in terms of this code. So it's a very combinatorial problem. Now, if we're lucky, we could just stop here. Unfortunately, we cannot. So it turns out that the index for CFT is built from a ternary code is always a multiple of 24. It's not hard to produce codes which have exactly 24 as the index. I didn't say it's easy, but you can just generate codes at random and sooner or later
we expect
hit one.
Days to do it at 24 times 7.
Hmm?
We expect the runtime to be 200 days to find one for length 24 times 7.
Okay, but up to 5. It was okay. But anyway, this is not enough. We need to somehow cut this down by an extra factor of greatest common divisor between k and 24. So in order to do so, we need to manipulate this CFT in some way. And as I said, the manipulation we're going to use is called orbifold. Are there any questions about lattice conformal field theories?
What was n here? I mean,
There was a certain number of currents.
And here you're happy just taking whatever.
Right. I take my lattice to consist of vectors of the form, k1 over square root of 3, k2 over square root of 3, k3 over square root of 3, etc. And I require it to have this as a sublattice. And that's enough to have a superconformal generator.
I guess my question is, for you're engineering something. So is there size of n you need to engineer what you need?
Well, I wanted ultimately to have things that have central charge 12k. So I'll have n equal to 12k.
Just to interrupt, the index automatically vanishes except for in the 12k case.
That's right. So to get something non-zero. I'm not sure what the question was, but the answer was that if n is not multiple of 12, the index will vanish. So to look at situations where the index does not vanish, we need to restrict to n equal to 12k. And then you can find examples which have non-zero index. Notice that the index is just counting some of the, it's counting with signs some operators in here with specific length, right? Because L0 is lambda square over 2, and we want L0 equal to C over 24, which is K over 2. So I'm looking for counting vectors in here with lambda squared equal to K. Counting them with a sign, which is just, this minus 1 to the F. Okay. So I want to discuss orbifolds.
I have a question. Can you maybe repeat what is that you're counting? You said index is just counting, and then you said counting.
It's counting vectors in this shifted lattice whose length is k. And it's counting it with a sign, which is essentially minus 1 to the vector contracted with the characteristic vector.
So is your problem if we didn't follow the lead up to it. Could one say your problem is to construct certain lattices with?
That's right. It's to build certain lattice, self-dual ternary codes, actually. That's right. With specific index and with certain symmetries that will allow me to do an orbit fold.
And what is the condition that you have a super conformal theory? Given a lattice, what exactly do I have to know?
Well, there are many ways you could try to build a superconformal generator. The superconformal generator is just an element of the vertex algebra with dimension 3/2 and a certain OPE. A special case of that will be a superconformal generator, which is a sum of vertex operators without derivatives of the scalar fields. And an even more special case is that this superconformal generator is a sum of individual superconformal generators for a one-dimensional for a one-dimensional lattice. So, I mean, here I'm really doing an example of what I said before. I start with some vertex algebra, which is the lattice, the algebra associated to this lattice, which is not self-dual. So does not define a CFT, but it defines a vertex algebra. And then I'm trying to extend this vertex algebra to get something self-dual. Extend this lattice to get something self-dual. And to do so, I need to give you a code, a ternary code. Okay, so until when? Then after, okay, plenty of time. So I want to discuss orbit folds now. And again, I will start from CFTs. So the starting point for doing an orbit fold is that I have some vertex algebra with an action of a discrete group. So this, now as I said, physically this algebra gives me a way to compute correlation functions on a Riemann surface. When I have a symmetry by some group, I could try to ask, to look for a situation when I can define correlation functions on a Riemann surface equipped with a flat H bundle. In other words, I might wonder if I can assemble my Riemann surface by twisting, while twisting by the action of H. Now, having an action of H on the vertex algebra is not enough for this. There is an obstruction to assembling a Riemann surface. This obstruction is called an anomaly. And it's an element in the bosonic case of the third cohomology group of H with value in U1. So if you give me any vertex algebra with a holomorphic vertex algebra with an H action, you can derive from it an element of this cohomology group. And if this element does not vanish, then you stop. But if you can write if you can trivialize the anomaly, then you can gauge. Then you can couple to H flat connections, to H bundles. And I should stress that you really need to pick a trivialization of your anomaly. So there are many inequivalent gaugings, and they're controlled by H2. Now, if you only care about algebra, you don't care about what gauging precisely means, perhaps. But once you can define the theory on a Riemann surface coupled with H to an H bundle, you can sum over the choice of bundles and get a new theory. This new theory will be associated to a new vertex algebra, which you could denote as A mod G, mod H, sorry. So this orbital operation takes a vertex algebra whose anomaly vanishes and produces a new vertex algebra, holomorphic vertex algebra. Now you can do the same in a spin case. So you can have the spin version of an orbital. There are some differences. The main difference is that the anomalies are different. They live in a different place. So the anomalies, so now you're going to have an action of H on all this data. And you have an anomaly which now lives in something called the supercohomology. I will not describe what the supercohomology is. It's a nice object. But again, as long as you can trivialize your anomaly, you can do an orbital load the spin theory and get a new spin theory.
G is an H there, right?
Sorry, yes. So now there are, of course, the group should always be G, but unfortunately there is a G over there and I felt a bit bad using it for both. So now there is a second supercohomology group worth of inequivalent gaugings, inequivalent orbifolds. Now notice that there are really more spin orbifolds typically than there are orbifolds. If you take a standard CFT, you can always pretend it's a spin CFT with no fermionic operators. But if you spin orbifold it, you might end up with an actual spin CFT, which is different from the CFTs you could get by standard orbifold. For example, you can do a spin orbifold of the monster CFT, or things like that, and get spin CFTs. Or of a lattice CFT. Anyway. Right, I will really not say anything about this supercohomology. At the end of the talk, I can answer questions about it. It is a fun subject. And literature on spin orbifolds is surprisingly scant. The notion of supercohomology, at least in physics, appeared quite recently in condensed matter physics. Anyway. But it's doable as much as that was doable. So now if you want to do an orbifold of superconformal field theory, you only need G to be H invariant. So what an orbifold does at the level of the vertex algebra is that it projects out everything that is not invariant under the action of the group, and then it adds in new modules of this restricted algebra, which are called twisted sectors. So if G was invariant under the action of H, G will survive the orbifold and will still have the correct OPEs. So you get a new superconformal field theory. The index of the new superconformal field theory will be different from the original one because you've thrown away some states and you might have added in other states. If you can arrange things so that they are not adding extra states, then the index is pretty much just divided by the order of the group, roughly speaking. So concretely, we'll be looking for ternary codes with appropriate symmetries. So for k equal to 2, for example, we look for a ternary code which has a Z2 symmetry with a property that orbit folding by it is possible and does not add extra twisted sector. And which, if the original ternary code had index 24, the orbit fold will have index 12. And so on for k equal to 3, 4, and 5. So the strategy is quite straightforward. And the computations is just consist of generating a ton of codes until you hit one that has the correct properties. So it's not terribly conceptual, perhaps. I have no idea how unique the CFTs are that we are producing. They're probably not unique. But now, why am I doing this? Right, of course. The project was definitely fun in the sense that, as I said, the literature on spin CFTs, on spin orbifolds, is quite scant. So we had to learn how to do some fun calculations. But now we'll try to explain why the result might actually be interesting. And this has to do with the theory of topological modular forms. So let me go back to the beginning. But first, do you have any questions?
Can you say again under which condition you can not add twisted sectors?
Well, the dimension of the twisted sectors is determined by the way the group acts on the lattice, pretty much. So you just need to find a symmetry which acts on enough directions of the lattice, pretty much, to make sure that the twisted sectors have high dimension and cannot contribute to the Ramon Galland states. Okay. So let me go back to what I had written here. So I had holomorphic CFTs, which are a special case of CFTs, which are a special case of QFTs. Now, holomorphic CFTs are definitely a very rigid object. You don't have deformation spaces of holomorphic CFTs. They're just individual points. So dimensional conformal field theories are still pretty rigid. We expect to have only finite dimensional. Deformation spaces. Quantum field theories are very deformable, especially if you allow yourself very general deformations. Pretty much because you can always add arbitrarily complicated new degrees of freedom at an arbitrarily high energy and then bring them down continuously. So these belong to very infinite dimensional. Spaces deformations. These deformation spaces in two dimensions have some structure in the sense that there is something called a C function, which there's notion of RG flow. So there are some. So typically, if you give me a CFT, there are some pretty canonical deformations of the CFT by relevant operators, which give you simpler CFTs. And then there is this arbitrary way of making it more complicated at high energy. So if you give me a certain quantum field theory, sort of it has a finite dimensional space of things that come out of it, in the sense of an RG flow, and a very large set of things that might come into it along the RG flow. But anyway, forget about this. Just say there is this infinite dimensional deformation space, and you might ask, how many connected components does it have, or which sort of homotopy does it have? At least you might wonder if it's possible to ask these questions. Similar questions in slightly different setup in condensed matter physics turned out to be very interesting, for example. One basic question you can ask is, are there any quantities which do not vary as I deform the theory? In particular, this will give you quantities which are invariant under a G-flow. And anomalies. A constant under deformations, in particular the gravitational anomaly. And if you don't have any symmetries, I think the gravitational anomaly is pretty much the only anomaly you have available. So this will have this space will have components which are labeled by this gravitational anomaly. And then I would guess that in the absence of supersymmetry, these components are likely to be connected. I'm not sure, though. I really don't know much about it. I don't even know how to try to answer these questions. But it doesn't seem unreasonable that I can deform every quantum field theory to a quantum field theory with the same anomaly just by bringing in random stuff from infinity. I mean, from very high energy, and pushing away the things I had before. Okay, it's not a precise statement. Now, I would like to ask the same question here. So, again, holomorphic superconformal field theories will be rigid. Superconformal field theories will have finite dimensional spaces of deformations. And quantum field theories with 1,0 supersymmetry will have infinite dimensional spaces of deformations. But now there are many more invariants. Because the anomaly, besides anomalies, you also had the Witten index. This is invariant under deformations. So there's definitely a map that goes from supersymmetric quantum field theories to the space of modular forms, pretty much. I think this was MF modular forms of weight two. No, C, just C. Yes, modular forms of weight C, given just by taking the index and multiplying it by some power of the eta function.
That's
a 2C, excellent. To make it, to remove some singularities. So at the very least, the space of connected components of quantum field theories, supersymmetric quantum field theories in two dimensions, has a chance to be labeled by modular forms. Now there is a conjecture due to Stolz and Techner, that this arrow factorizes to something more refined, which is TMF, topological modular forms. So this is a mathematical conjecture, but it has very strong physical meaning, right? It's telling you that there are a lot of RG flow invariants for supersymmetric theories, which we did not know about. So I find it very interesting and very puzzling because I have no idea how to build these invariants physically. So I would welcome any evidence that this conjecture is true or false, right? I don't know how to study this space, so it's very hard for me to understand if this conjecture is true. But I know how to study this. Now, because this is included in here, I definitely have a map from here to topological modular forms. These are two mathematically well-defined objects. So now you can start asking mathematical questions about this arrow. Right? Is there a map from holomorphic superconformal field theories to TMF? which factorizes. Now, notice that this lands on a very special part of TMF, the one that projects down to an integer, to a power of eta. Right? So I want to restrict myself to this. I need to ask questions about the topological model of forms whose image are powers of eta. And in particular, it's known that the image of TMF is not any multiple of eta to the 2c, but only multiples of 24 divided by greatest common divisor between 24 and c over 12 eta to the 2c. So if there is this arrow, I should be able, well, I might or not be able to find holomorphic CFTs with this index. I should not be able to find holomorphic CFTs with an index smaller than this. And it would be nice if I can actually find representatives here for the generator of this. And so that's what we did for k from 1 that goes from 1 to 5. We seem to stumble into problem whenever we try to build things with index smaller than this. And we managed to find things with index that looks like this. I'm not sure, this is clearly not a very stringent test of this conjecture, but it is some kind of a test, a beginning. And clearly, you can imagine going much farther. Also, I think this discussion suggests some interesting directions to go. In a sense, a lot of these holomorphic CFTs that we build have large symmetry groups. It would be nice to keep track of the symmetry groups in the whole analysis. In particular, there should be a good notion of equivariant TMF, which keeps track of the symmetry groups. And there should be, you know, it should be possible to identify things like the image in equivariant TMF of lattice CFTs. Also, this whole orbifold technology should be visible in TMF because the anomalies are invariant under deformations. So equivariant TMF classes should be labeled by a class in supercohomology. And if this class vanishes, it should be possible to take orbifold and get new classes in TMF. So this was the motivation of the work. And I think it'll be really interesting to develop these questions further.
So we're going to solicit questions always from the overseas audience first and then open the floor to everybody. So people in Germany, do you have questions?
So, said in your talk that essentially what you is to generate lots of codes and lots of orbifolds, and you hit this index, and you have this conjecture from coming from TMF that it is impossible to go lower than the given index. Do you have the feeling that you have well tested that conjecture? I mean, have you tried to go lower and it hasn't worked? I mean, what is your general feeling about how well of a test this consists?
I don't think we tried very hard. We tried a bit, but you know. you could really write a program that generates codes and tests them. And if the program runs for a very long time and doesn't give you one, I guess, you would have tried harder, but it would be nicer to have a proof, of course. No, that's true. For low k, I think that's true.
Well, since they're taking a while, let's open the floor to everyone.
So what kind of groups H do you wind up having to use in the construction?
Oh, just Z, ZK.
Always ZK?
Yes. I mean, it's much easier to compute the anomaly for cyclic orbifolds. So we use those.
Are there any other questions?